Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Telerik. Create compelling app experiences across any screen with the Telerik platform. Telerik's end-to-end platform uniquely combines industry-leading UI tools with cloud services to simplify the entire app development cycle. Telerik offers everything .NET developers need to build quality apps faster. Try it free at telerik.com/platform. That's telerik.com/platform.
From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 513. In this episode, Scott talks with Next Game CTO Kalle Hiitola about what it's like building and scaling a mobile game to millions of users.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Today, we're talking with Next Game CTO Kalle Hiitola. How are you?
Fine, thanks. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thanks for chatting with me. And you stayed up late for me, and I appreciate that.
No worries.
So a couple years back, Next Games, the mobile game company that you work for, raised like $6 million in starting up, right, and becoming the next big mobile game company. And fast forward to 2016, and The Walking Dead game is a certified hit, isn't it?
Well, yeah, so it seems like. At least we're really pleased with the success that we have been seeing with the game, so... at least on some level, it's a hit. Yes.
you sound very modest. Is it hard to judge whether a game is a hit or not?
Yeah, that is a bit of a pickle. It depends so much where you compare it to. If you compare it to the big names, we're still way behind them. But then again, if you just compare like on general level, how games, perform, we're, doing pretty well. Mm-hmm. And of course, it's the Finnish way of actually not being too proud of anything. We're kind of modest people.
Really? You don't run around just going, "Hey, I've got a hit game. Woo!"
No, we're like, even if we would be number one, we're like, yeah, we're somewhere there, maybe top somewhere, but not really like shouting about it.
So when you publish a game, when you hit publish, were you all sitting in a room, like the entire company is like in the main common room, and you hit publish and you say it's live? Or was it just something you did and then you went home?
Well, we actually did gather together, especially on our first game. We do have two games. The initial first game was the Compass Point West, which is a battle builder game.
Okay.
And that was like our first one to come out. It was last sprint that we published that game. Mm-hmm. And especially doing that because obviously being the first of for the company, we were all gathered in our meeting room and just hit publish all together and launch the game. And then we started to wait until it actually went live, drew out the Apple Store and started to see how people started to come into the game. We were lucky enough to get featuring and actually... thanks to that, we had some spare time before we actually launched the game during that day. And, our tech team was thinking like, what can we do? Like, we have done all the preparations that we can. Everything should be set up and everything was triple checked. So we came up with this idea that let's create this, world map that will show live every player that comes online as a dot. So we can visualize how players are pouring in. So we ended up watching that world map, which we called the world domination map, the whole evening. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty nice because you could actually see how players, when the featuring went out on different countries on App Store. So you could see how people start pouring in from UK and then they start pouring in from US and so on. Like you could see the time zones passing by, the time passing by throughout the globe. Uh-huh. And for The Walking Dead, we did pretty much the same. Although we weren't all in the same room when we launched the game because we were a bit out here and there in different locations. Some of us was having some launching festivities in New York, and most of the company was here in Helsinki watching how the game was published. And then few of us was in Redmond, actually sitting at the Microsoft office.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you were all over the world and watching this live globally in different time zones.
Yeah.
So when you hit publish, do you know that it's live? Like, when do you know it's live? Do you sit there in the App Store and just hit refresh, or do you wait for it to be featured? And when you got featured, is that just luck, or do you have some relationship with Apple that makes sure that it's featured?
It's mainly luck. Obviously, we try to communicate with Apple about, like, the have some sort of contact there, like saying that we are launching game, and of course, like, PR and everything like that helps there, but it's that there's no magic to it. There's no way of, like, they make their own decisions, and there's nothing we can basically do about it.
Mm-hmm. And I understand that when apps get launched, when mobile games get launched, sometimes you'll become popular in a country randomly and you don't know. Like, you'll just be sitting around, like, suddenly we're huge in Malaysia and you don't know why that happened. Have you noticed there's a particular country or part of the world that just loves playing The Walking Dead, No Man's Land more than another?
I should probably check from the data. I believe there were some odd countries. It especially shows when you're looking at countries that are spending most money, and then it can be some very odd ones or very small ones that are, like, when you compare the amount of spending money to the amount of players you're getting, like, Switzerland is surprisingly good.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like those guys have a lot of money or something like that.
Or a lot of money to spend on equipment for their people.
It's not like crazy amounts, but it's compared to something else. It's you can see that some countries are better. But
I know that, for example, on the first weekend, of course, the United States was in the top, but also Thailand apparently loves this game.
Yeah, there was a lot of players coming in from Thailand. Can't remember what other countries were the biggest ones, but obviously US was the biggest one, and we went to number one during that time.
Mm-hmm. So in the first weekend, it was over 1 million downloads, and it was the number one app in 12 countries, number one free game in 13 countries, and the number one role-playing game in 117 countries. So this is a big deal, and the best part was that 50 million zombies were killed in that first weekend.
Yeah, that's quite a lot. would probably take me a lifetime to do that by myself.
So the thing that I thought was interesting about this is that you mentioned, of course, just now that you were at Microsoft, but you're not really a Microsoft shop. You're not necessarily a shop that identifies yourselves as a Microsoft shop, right?
Well, no, we don't identify ourselves as any specific company that we would be using just like some companies' technologies. We more like look into what would be just the easiest way and most effective way of getting things done. Mm-hmm. And for us, it meant to use Microsoft in the backend solutions, although we do use some bit of Amazon and we do use a bit of Google, but mainly on Microsoft systems. And then when we're creating our client side, it's all done on Unity. So.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, like most companies that I've heard that are successful, a hybrid cloud strategy is the way to go, right? You, like you just mentioned, the three major clouds, and you've got, you know, a little bit on all of those, on all of those clouds.
Yeah. Well, obviously, like 90% of everything is on Microsoft cloud, but there's mm-hmm. still a little bits and parts on our cloud providers. Mm-hmm. It's just like, all the cloud providers have, like, their best benefits sort of a thing that they can offer. So right. There's, like, if you compare some of the technologies that Google is providing compared to Microsoft, there's obviously something that Google is better than Microsoft is, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm. So on the first weekend, we'll just use the first weekend as an example, apparently 31 million minutes were played just on that opening weekend alone. So I can assume now, you know, fast forwarding from October, when this came out to now, months later, we're looking at billions and billions of transactions that are going on. How did you decide where to put that? Is that, did you say when you were starting, we're going to use a NoSQL database, or did you try it in MySQL or SQL Server and then say this is not really a good idea for our persistence layer?
Well, the decision not to use SQL and go with NoSQL solution was done pretty early on. I didn't actually even consider using SQL because in my previous line of job, I had my battles with SQL servers and trying to scale them. And to my experience, they don't just simply scale. Simply, they don't just scale. Especially when we started to talk about like large amount of users, they're fine until like hundreds and thousands. But when you get more than that, they just tend to break down.
And it sounds like, you know, scaling it and sharding and all the kinds of stuff one has to do when you're doing SQL, that's not interesting. You want to make really good games, and really you just want to move the slider bar and have the NoSQL database scale for you.
Yeah, that would be the optimal situation. Obviously, at the moment, it's not quite there yet. We're using Azure table storages, which are pretty good in providing scalability. But for example, if you want to shard them more than your initial shard, you need to do a complete data migration.
I see. So with table storage, it's a big deal to go and change your existing sharding layout.
Yeah, it is. Okay. We learned that the hard way.
Ah. Well, and this is what's good about this kind of conversation, is you find out what's the hard way and what's the easy way, because things sound like they're easy initially, but then there's technical debt that builds up. What do you use Azure Document DB, the JSON-based NoSQL solution, versus table storage for?
Document DB is mainly used for fast searches. So we store basically the same data in table storages and also in Document DB, but we delay the saving for the Document DB, and also we use aggregate tables there to create faster searches. So yeah, the lack of indexing in table storages is forcing us to use some solution there, and Document DB was pretty optimal for it.
So when you've got like millions or hundreds of thousands, millions of users online at the same time, how chatty is this? Like, there's all the little transactions you make as you upgrade your people or as you go out and you battle. Are you just sending a constant stream of data into the back end and letting it chew on it? Or are there smarts in the game itself that, you know, that batch these things up and send aggregate data back?
Well, the client isn't that smart. In a sense, it does send we do send a command every time you do a change in the game that needs to be reflected into the game model or in the state of the player. But what we do is we actually cache these players on the front servers. So instead of pushing every change always back into the database or into table storage or, instead, we keep them in memory in cache, and we just keep on talking with the client directly from the cache. So it's really fast. They're basically in one big dictionary, all the players that are on that server instance. And we only store the player into the persistent data storage when the player disconnects or the server goes into a shutdown.
I see. So you're pushing data into that edge cache, that front end cache, and then you flush it effectively when the person either has timed out and disappeared or they've formally left the game.
Yeah, that's basically what we do to simplify.
And is that, of course, everything's simplified. Is that like a Redis cache or your own memory, just in, like I said, in memory dictionary, or are you using an out of the box or an open source memory caching system like Redis?
We are using just, it's in memory dictionary at the moment. We looked into using Redis. The problem was that we were unable to get actually any good performance numbers out of Redis. At least like when we talk with Microsoft and ask like what's the performance on their Redis solution, no one came up and gave us like exact numbers. They were like, It's fast. How fast?
Oh, interesting.
Well, it's fast. Okay.
So you wanted like benchmark numbers. Right. Because you're thinking about things in terms of milliseconds, right? You don't want, yeah. You're doing work that, you can't wait a second or 2 seconds for something to happen if you're thinking about an in-memory cache.
Yeah. And also because we're handling our models, player models in JSON. Mm-hmm. So if we would use Redis, we would every time need to basically serialize that model somehow to be mm-hmm. able to store it in Redis. And the most costly thing that we do on the servers is actually serializing the model back and forward from JSON and or serializing the commands or anything that happens there and deserializing stuff. So when we actually store them as memory objects, there's no need for serialization because they're already there. So that is a huge performance benefit that we get from using in-memory cache instead.
Yeah, you know, I think that's really interesting. That's something that has come up in my experience over the last 20 years, doing all kinds of, before it was JSON, it was XML, and before it was XML, it was CSV, but you'd be surprised that when you get a really tuned system and you start getting latency down to nothing, serialization comes up as the number one thing that your application ends up doing. And then you have to ask yourself, how badly do I really want to serialize this?
Yeah, we noticed that is actually the number one thing that is using our resources at the moment is serializing. So we are obviously always looking into options that could we use other ways of serializing than JSON, for example, protopuf or messageback. Mm-hmm. But they all have their drawbacks, and obviously also it's very important that those things are serialized the same way. Like the data that we want to serialize, the objects we want to serialize are serialized the same way also on Unity clients that run on Mono. So we have to be really careful what we use for serialization.
Right. And are you on Android now as well?
Yeah.
So you're on Android and iOS. Are those your two main clients?
Yeah, those are.
Right. And you want to make sure that serialization works everywhere. But you also, I assume, as you evolve the game, as you add new features, you want a reasonably flexible schema because there might be new features that you add to a guild. And you've also got people on different versions of the game who might not all update at the exact same time. And if you go and serialize with protocol buffers or you start thinking about serialization, then you have to manage serialization and versioning of serialization.
Yeah, that is a bit of a pickle to handle. Actually, at the moment, we don't support players with different versions. At least they cannot have like a big difference in the version number.
Oh, okay.
That's
so
just
the client would force me to update if it found I was too far back.
Yeah, it will say that you need to update. But that's okay. Just since otherwise creating all the necessary migrations and making sure that they work. It would be too much of a hassle. We would focus mainly on creating migrations instead of new features. And we want to keep on refreshing the game and keep it fresh for the players all the time. So.
Mm-hmm. When you're doing these kinds of different queries against the backend system, how many queries are when it's a user thinking about the things that are in the user's world versus major aggregating data like high score leaderboards that are the entire country or, you know, scores by, you know, grouping, like all the people on Facebook and all the people in Thailand and things like that. You know, there's different, I guess what I'm saying is that there's different, characteristics as you're playing the game. There's the things that I care about and my guild thinks about versus the things that my country thinks about versus the global leaderboard.
Well, actually, the leaderboards in themselves don't do that much of a work at all.
Hmm.
We have a pretty nice leaderboard system that is created in a way that we can have infinite amount of leaderboards, and the game itself can decide what kind of leaderboards they want to use. So the backend doesn't actually care what kind of leaderboards you have. So if the game team decides to have a new leaderboard with some, like, based on, but if you would like to have like leaderboard for players from Helsinki, they could do it. There's no limitation to it, thanks to DocumentDB. which we use to generate our leaderboards. And then the player data, it's actually pretty simple in a sense. It's for the server, the player is just a bunch of text, basically. Mm-hmm. And also a model that inherits a base model. And the server only understands base model, and it has very like few methods into it. So from the server point of view, things are really simple. And like if we create new features, it doesn't usually need a lot of effort from the server team to actually implement them, because everything is so generic. We handle all the commands that the clients send in. They're all just serialized JSON. And for the server, they're just serialized JSON that's happened to implement certain interface. And we then just shove it down to the model and the model manager. And the model manager handles the execution of that command on the server side. So for us, everything is just strings on the server side.
Nice. So in this world of cloud-based scalable games in 2016, how much do you have to think about scale, right? I think when the marketing people sell us the cloud, they tell us that, oh yeah, you don't have to think about it at all. But, you know, computer science is computer science. So somewhere between you don't have to think about it at all and you have to think about it constantly, you know, reality is in the middle somewhere. And I'm curious, in the real world, how much are you sweating scale?
Well, I would like to say not that much, but then I actually start thinking how much I've been thinking about that like the past week. It's been quite a lot. Hmm. So,
is that vary week by week?
Yeah, well, it does. Depending on what's the like, there's always some issues, as there is with any system. There's always some issues, and depending which issue you happen to be solving. But for us, it's like, yeah, in a sense, we already did all the parts that affect scaling. Like we did the sharding, we have the caching, so the foundation is there. And we have the cloud tools that helps us to scale. But then you can abuse those in a sense that if you start thinking like, okay, it'll just scale, but then we notice that we are actually, each player is like several megabytes of JSON. So because it'll scale and we didn't pay attention how much data we are actually putting into a player save, it doesn't actually scale anymore. So then the marketing speeches don't affect anymore. So that kind of things you have to think about and be careful that as you go along and develop the game, you don't recreate that kind of problems. So in a sense, you need to think about it. But if you laid your foundation well, it's pretty easy not to get into any sort of scaling problems.
Do you think that the scaling issues are really a matter of how much money you're willing to spend versus how much you're able to scale? Because I assume that you could hide architectural flaws by just paying lots of money and scaling to the highest level, you know, on any cloud, right? Just throw CPU at it. So is it a balance between how much engineering work we want to spend to affect how much money we spend each month?
Well, actually, throwing a CPU in a sense like scaling up is something that we are not using a scalability factor. We look more into like how many players we can support simultaneously on one server instance. And then we just have to make sure that the system works as we add those instances, so we scale out. And in that scenario, you cannot actually hide that much of your architecture depth if you didn't do it well. Scaling up, in a sense, if you just draw more CPU or bigger instances, then you could basically hide some of the flaws. But I wouldn't say that would be the same thing for the for scaling out and making sure that you can actually truly scale, in a sense that as you add more instances, your scaling will just multiply by the number of instances.
I see. So when you decide as a company, as a team, how many of people you want on one server. Did you just kind of figure that out? Or how did you know, like, is it 1,000 or 10,000 or some number? And you go, yeah, that seems like a good number. Now we'll scale out instead of up.
Well, no, we actually did a pretty much load testing. So we did quite a bit of that. We used the Visual Studio online for that, which is really easy to just create tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands virtual users. So what we did, we created a unit test that was also using SignalR as connect, which we use for connectivity to backend. And basically it was, we recorded the commands that we sent during a normal play session, straight out of Unity. And then we playback that with the unit test. And then we launched that through the Visual Studio Online load test harness, which then I believe it can these days generate. It used to be 50 agents that it could generate, or 50 different instances of mm-hmm. virtual machines. I think it's now 200 or something like that. So we used that to bombard our load test environment. And from there, we could see when we were actually spiking on CPU and what's the perfect level for how many players we can support from on each instance.
Okay. And then once you've got that number, do you auto scale out, or do you have a team that makes the decision to scale out?
We have set auto scaling on, but most of the time it's happening by decision from the team. So we have a continuous monitoring of the situation, an alerting system, and of course on-call personnel that will immediately take action if we get an alert that CPU is burning somewhere.
Mm-hmm. So then you could, you know, let's say that you were on the news or Oprah mentions, hey, I love Walking Dead, No Man's Land, and then everyone rushes. It'll scale, you know, cleanly, and the people who are playing the game won't notice that there's a rush of people.
That would be the situation.
Fantastic. So then let me ask you this. Now that you've got that infrastructure created for this game, the next game, how much can you use what you've learned and what you've built to make the next massively multiplayer game just work that much easier?
Well, everything. The way we build the system, it's actually built in a way that it can be used by any game. So we're actually using it. Our first game is using the same system, the Compass Bot West, as The Walking Dead. So it could basically host any game that just happens to obey to our interface.
Ah, this is great. So then next game can be using this backend, and then it's intellectual property that you could sell or license to someone else, and they could use a backend.
In theory, yes.
Yeah,
and most likely our next game will use this same backend system. It has some pretty good benefits. Like, it's basically, well, I wouldn't say like cheat proof, but it's really hard to cheat on. So, because everything is run on the server. We run the whole game model on the server, mm-hmm. and the model is deterministic. So whatever happens on the server will happen on the client, and vice versa.
Right. I think that people have decided that even though iCloud on the iTunes side, like iCloud game saves, is not exactly the best way to do things. If people can log in via Facebook or Google or their Game Center ID, and I can go from my iPhone to my iPad and back, and my game just feels persistent, that this is a model that people who play mobile games want.
Yeah, and that's definitely something you can do with our games. You can basically play it on simultaneously, but you can share the same game on your iPad or iPhone or even your Android device.
Yeah, absolutely. I like being able to roam with any game. And I think that if I have to go and synchronize saves and things like that. So I think that the model for these massively multiplayer games, or games that can move from mobile device to mobile device, where the server is, like you said, is running the game model on the server, it has all sorts of benefits. Like you said, less likely to have people cheating, but not having to think about, you know, model synchronization as well.
Yeah. And because it's yeah, the synchronization is really simple. The server is always right. We don't trust anything that the client actually says. For example, if we send a command that you collect, like in The Walking Dead, you collect your tomato cans. Mm-hmm. Instead of sending like command from the client, like collect 500 cans, it just sends a command from the client, which is first executed on the client against the model of the client, saying that collect all available cans from this building. Mm-hmm. And then it runs on the server and does the same thing. And that'll update the number of available tomato cans that you have in the game on both sides, but the model itself actually decides how much. So right. If you try to cheat, eventually, when you try to use those cans, there will be a command that will use certain amount of cans, but it would fail on the server, but because it didn't have that amount of cans that your client thought it would have. If right. For so example, if you have a jailbreak device that you could basically go tinker with the data.
I see. So the authoritative source
yes.
is the server, and that prevents these kind of issues.
Yes.
Very cool. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me today.
I was happy to be here.
So make sure to check out Next Games, and you can go look at The Walking Dead No Man's Land on iTunes and on the Android store. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.